Now, if you're following along in your programs, it says we're going to read the scripture and then have the children come. But I want the children up front to hear this story. So we're going to have the children gather up front, the younger among us, and this is our food pantry Sunday. The item of the week is carrots or vegetables or whatever you brought. And so if the young folks could come and join us and gather up all the carrots and bring them here. Mom's got some for you right there. Have a seat. You'll just have to wait and find out. We are so glad you're here. When we started our stories, it was in the afternoon, and Jesus had been teaching and teaching all day, and it got late. And then at about maybe 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, Jesus got into a boat with his disciples, and he went all the way across the sea. But in the middle of the night, there was a big storm, and there were wind and waves, and Jesus was sleeping in the boat, and they woke him up, and they said, "Jesus, there's a big storm. We're all going to die." And Jesus woke up, and do you remember what he did? What did he do, Cece? He said, "Peace. Be still." Just like that, the wind and the waves stopped, and they said, "Who is this?" Well, the next morning, he got to the other side of the lake, safe and sound, and there was a man that came to meet him. Remember the man who had those monsters in him, and he was, like this? And Jesus healed him and made him well. And all the people were scared, and they said, "Jesus, you need to go away from here." They were scared of him. And so Jesus got back in the boat and sailed to the other side. And so here we are. Let's say about 3 o'clock, almost a whole day later in this life of Jesus, and we come to our next story. And I wanted you guys to be close up here so you could hear it really good. It's a story that I'm going to start reading to you, and I want you to listen for a woman who's been sick and bleeding for 12 years and a little girl who's 12 years old, okay? So listen for those. I'm going to start reading. Jesus crossed the lake again, and on the other side, a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Jairus, one of the synagogue leaders, came forward. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his feet and pleaded with Jesus, saying, "My daughter is about to die. Please, please come and place your hands on her so that she can be healed and live." So Jesus went with him, and a swarm of people were following Jesus.
Hey, Pastor Ben. Pastor Ben.
Yeah.
I got to interrupt.
Oh.
Yeah, I have a story to tell.
Okay.
Can I interrupt your story to
sure,
tell my story,
sure,
please?
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. So, there was that swarm of people, and in that swarm of people, there was a woman there who had been bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a lot under the care of many doctors and had spent everything she had without getting any better. In fact, she had gotten worse. Because she had heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his clothes. She was thinking, "If I can just touch his clothes, I'll be healed." Her bleeding stopped immediately, and she sensed in her body that her illness had been healed. At that very moment, Jesus recognized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples said to him, "Don't you see the crowd is pressing against you, and yet you asked who touched me?" But Jesus looked around carefully to see who had done it. The woman, full of fear and trembling, came forward. Knowing what had happened to her, she fell down in front of Jesus and told him the whole truth. He responded, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace, healed from your disease." That's my story. Thanks for letting me interrupt.
You're welcome. So while Jesus was still speaking with her, messengers came from the synagogue leader's house, saying to Jairus, "Your daughter has died. Why bother the teacher any longer?" But Jesus overheard their report, and he said to the synagogue ruler, "Don't be afraid. Just keep trusting." He didn't allow anyone to follow him except for Peter, James, and John, James's brother. They came to the synagogue leader's house, and Jesus saw a commotion. There were people crying and wailing loudly. And Jesus went in and said to them, "What's all this commotion and crying about? The child isn't dead. She's only sleeping." But they laughed at him. He threw them all out. And then taking the child's parents and his disciples with him, he went to the room where the child was. And taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Little girl, get up." Suddenly the young woman got up and began to walk around. And she was 12 years old. They were shocked. He gave them strict orders that no one should know what had happened. And then he told them to give her something to eat. Now, I did bring some things with me. At our house, we have three active boys. You may have met them. And that means that bumps and bruises and scrapes and cuts are a regular thing, huh? When somebody, Ezra, very active boys. Here we go. When somebody in our house gets a bump or a scrape or a boo-boo, we do a couple of things. What do you do at your house when somebody gets a scrape or a cut or a boo-boo? Band-Aids. That's right. We have Band-Aids. And you know what? She picks at her bug bites. Yeah, we use calamine lotion. We have Band-Aids. And do you know what kind of Band-Aids we found work better? Ones that have pictures on them. That's right. We have Band-Aids that have Lightning McQueen and Cruz Ramirez and other race cars. And we have Band-Aids that have silly smiley faces on them. And sorry about that. We have lots of these Band-Aids. We have these Band-Aids, and we put the Band-Aids on. What else do you do in your house when somebody gets a boo-boo, when somebody gets hurt?
I pick at my bug bites.
You pick at your bug bites? Yeah. What do you do, Shelby? Put cream on it, ointment, medicine. I didn't bring some, but we do that too. Yeah, we wash it off and put some medicine on it. You know what else we do? We put an ice pack on it sometimes. That's your mic. Oh, we have this fun ice pack. It's a minion, and that helps too. It's our boo-boo buddy, and it stays in the freezer. And when somebody gets hurt, we ask them if they're okay. And then, because we do some other things, we ask them if they're okay, and then a lot of times Everett or Cyrus or Ezra will go and get the minion ice pack for his brother and bring it over and put it on him. And then they'll go and get mommy or daddy, and we'll wash the boo-boo and help them feel better. You know what else do you guys do? We do something else in our family when there's a boo-boo. A lot of times your fingers, that's right. Well, there's something that our boys often ask for mom or dad to do before we put the Band-Aid on, or sometimes after we put the Band-Aid on. Yeah, give it a kiss. You guys remember too. Do you still do that with your boo-boos? Yeah. We give them a kiss. And in our family, oftentimes, especially if you were the one who maybe helped cause the boo-boo, you ask them if they're okay, give them a hug, and ask them what they need. Usually what Cyrus needs is a fire truck. That is often what he needs to help. We do all these things, and some of those things are to help the boo-boo heal faster, like washing it, and putting the Band-Aid on helps keep it clean. But some of those things aren't just about helping the boo-boo to heal faster. They're about helping the person who's hurt to feel better. It's why we get Cyrus a fire truck when he's hurt, because it helps him feel better. It might not make the cut heal any faster, but it helps him feel better. The kiss helps him feel better because we recognize that the boo-boo is not just about the bleeding. It's not just about the bump, that we want to help him feel better. The other day when Cyrus fell out of bed, his mama picked him up and snuggled him and held him until he felt better. One of the things I really like in our Bible story today is that Jesus remembers that. When Jesus is there with the woman who has been sick and bleeding for 12 years, he heals her. Did you hear that part in the story? She touches his cloak. She touches his robe, the bottom of his clothes, and she gets healed like that. But he doesn't leave it there. He calls her out and tells her, "Be at peace. Your faith has made you well." Because he knows that it's not just about being sick and getting better, that it's about something else to make her not just heal, but to feel better. And then with the little girl, when he raises her up, remember, he talks to her so nice. He takes her hand and he says, "Little girl, get up." And then he asks them to give her something to eat, because he's worried about her and probably about her parents too. When Jairus, her dad, is really scared, he says to him, he says, "Don't be afraid. Just keep trusting." I like that Jesus remembers that it's not just about making the sickness better, but that it's about caring for people. And I think sometimes we do best when we do that too. When we see people who are hurting or sick or who are hungry, when we remember that it's not just about healing the boo-boo or giving them some food to eat, but it's about remembering to help them feel better. Can you say a prayer with me? Repeat after me. Dear God,
about the body healing.
Yeah. Dear God, thank you for healing us. Help us to remember that you made other people feel better. Not just get cured. Help us to do the same. I still remember the sound. That barking cough. Like a seal, unlike any cough we've ever heard. I remember going into Everett's room. I remember him wheezing and struggling for breath. When it happened to Ezra, we were scared, but at least I had an idea of what was happening then, knew somewhat what to do. But that first time with Everett, we were new parents. It was the middle of the night, and we were terrified. I remember rushing to the car, getting him into his car seat, the whole way to the hospital, just looking back in the mirror again and again, saying to him, "Just keep breathing. That's your job. Do your job, buddy. Just keep breathing." One day in the life of Jesus, 24 hours. It had begun that afternoon after a long day of teaching when Jesus and his disciples had gotten in a boat to go to the other side of the lake. When the wind and the waves threatened, Jesus said, "Peace, be still." And the storm ceased. The disciples were afraid, wondering, "Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?" They sailed across the lake to a land of tombs and swine and evil spirits, and there they met a man possessed. But even the legion of demons knew that they were overcome. The demons were sent away and the man restored. The people of the village had never seen anything like this. They were afraid and asked Jesus to go away. So once more, Jesus enters the boat, and he and his disciples return across the lake back to familiar ground. Stories spread and the crowds are waiting to meet him, this teacher who is breaking all the rules, changing the realities we thought we knew. The crowd parts and a man comes forward. He is a respectable man, the ruler of the synagogue. He's the head of the local Jewish community, well off, no doubt. But now he is desperate. His name is Jairus, and his daughter is sick. She's dying, and all of his respectability, all of his class, all of his wealth mean nothing to him. He is desperate. He loves his daughter. He would do anything to save her, like me, rushing through the night to get our boy to help. This respectable man, this leader of the people, has run to Jesus and throws himself down at Jesus' feet, and he begs, he pleads with Jesus to save his daughter. He's a good man. Until now in Mark's gospel, respectable folks like Jairus, leaders in the community, have stayed away from Jesus. They've kept their distance as the poor and broken have flocked to this new teacher. But now Jairus himself is broken, and he doesn't care what anyone thinks. He only cares about saving his daughter. The doctors can do nothing. She is beyond their skill. They've told him that all there is left is to wait and grieve. But he cannot stand by, not while she still lives. And so when he hears that Jesus has landed, he runs and crashes through the crowd. He throws himself down at Jesus' feet and pleads, "Please, place your hands on her so that she can be healed and live." So Jesus goes with him. And then a strange thing happens. Their journey, our story, is interrupted. They're moving with a sense of haste, a sense of urgency, and yet we are introduced to a new character, a woman. She could hardly be more different than Jairus. She's been bleeding for 12 years and has suffered much under many doctors. Whatever wealth she may have had is gone now, spent chasing a cure that never came. 12 years. She's been sick for so long, it's hard to remember what it is to be well. And this is a particular sickness. Jairus is the head of the synagogue. This woman would not even be allowed in. For the Jews of the time, a woman who was bleeding was said to be impure, and even in the outermost court of the temple, the place where everyone else was admitted, even foreigners, a woman during her monthly issue of blood was not permitted. And this woman had been sick like this for 12 years. She was considered unclean, and anyone who touched her would also become unclean for 12 years. What must that have been like? We are hurrying to Jairus' house to save his daughter who is dying. The crowds are pressing in, and there's this woman. She too has heard of Jesus. Like Jairus, she thinks, if I can just touch the hem of his robe as he goes by. She pries her way through the crowd, reaches down low at the risk of being trampled. There it is. There it is. Almost got it. And there. She touches the robe, and like that, she's healed. 12 years of suffering, life as an outcast, and in an instant she is healed. She has her miracle, and so she turns around to go home. But Jesus stops. We are hurrying, the child is dying, and Jesus stops. He says, "Who touched me?" Even the disciples can't believe it. Jesus, the crowd, look around. Who touched you? Everybody touched you. I wonder what Jairus is thinking. Why are we stopping? But Jesus is not bound by the tyranny of the urgent. There is important work to be done here, and Jesus is able to change plans, able to be interrupted. This willingness to be interrupted is a growing edge for me. It is a reality of my daily life at home with these three children, of course, and even a reality of life in the church. I have come to know in my head that real ministry, the best ministry, the most important ministry, is usually what happens while I'm trying to write my sermon. No one in this room, including me, is likely to remember the words I share this morning after a few years. But people remember the sudden trip to the hospital when there's a need, or the conversation with the person who just stopped in because they needed to talk. The life that happens while we're making other plans, as John Lennon said, the ministry that happens while we're doing other ministry, the interruptions are often the most important. Yet I still have to work to remind myself of that in the moment. There was an experiment I heard about years ago. The study presented itself as something about reflections on the story of the Good Samaritan, and they enlisted a number of seminarians to preach on the text. The sermon was to be given at a certain time, and with each one they contrived, I don't know, by bumping the time at the last minute or something, to have the seminarian be running late, rushing to get to the church on time to preach. Then, of course, along the way, the real experiment unfolded. Each one of the preachers found themselves passing by someone in distress, someone in need of help. I don't remember the particular scenario, but you can imagine it. They were all in a hurry. They were all late to preach a sermon they had prepared on the Good Samaritan. And so unwittingly, each one acting like the priest and the Levite they were going to preach against, each one walked by on the other side of the road. I wish I could say that I would have done differently. The study, this story, is a reminder to me. I'm still working on it. At home with my boys, here at church. I'm not good at it yet. But I'm still working to see those moments not as interruptions, but as the gifts of God, trusting that I am where God wants me to be in the moment. So we are hurrying with Jairus to save his daughter, but Jesus stops. He is interrupted, or rather, he interrupts the journey. "Who touched me?" he says. The disciples are confused. "It's a crowd. Everybody touched you." But Jesus knows that something else has happened, and so does the woman. She knows that she has been healed. Why did Jesus stop? He knew the urgency of their mission, and the woman had already been healed. So why stop? Why draw the crowd's attention? Why not just let her slip away? I think Jesus understood something. I think Jesus realized that after 12 years of life as an outcast, shunned by all, after 12 years of sickness and brokenness, curing the disease was not actually the woman's biggest need anymore. After 12 years of loneliness, suffering, being on the outside, the disease which led to her shunning was only the proximate cause. It was no longer the biggest hurt. I think Jesus realized that. The woman herself may not have realized it, but I think Jesus did. And so he stops and then asks, "Who touched me?" And the woman, full of fear and trembling, came forward. Knowing what had happened to her, she fell down in front of Jesus and told him the whole truth. I love that line. She told him the whole truth. At NYC, Christina Cleveland, one of the speakers, cited a translation which reads, "She told him her whole truth." She's terrified and comes out in front of the crowd, and we can see her maybe start babbling. I'm sure the story is not coherent as it starts to come out, as it starts to pour out from her. There in front of Jesus and the crowds, there in front of God and everybody, she stepped out of the shadows, spoke her whole truth. She told the story of those 12 years. And Jesus listened. The crowd listens. Even Jairus, to his credit, in the midst of his own desperation, listens. And Jesus responded, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace, healed from your disease." The bonds that have been broken, the connection that has been lost, can only be restored when the woman is given space to speak her story. When we allow ourselves to be interrupted, even in the midst of our urgency, and listen. When we allow ourselves to hear her whole truth and let that story do what it does. I can only imagine Jairus in the midst of this affair. I think of what it would have been like if I came into the emergency room that night with Everett and came to find a line of people waiting. Actually, there were other people. The triage nurse sent us back right away, but what if she hadn't? I don't know what was going on with those others. I was too focused. What if she had asked us to wait while the medical team cared for someone more urgent? Jairus' daughter is dying. Not just sick and in need of healing, she is dying, actively dying. They are in a hurry, but they stopped, they waited. Even Jairus listens. And I am humbled to think he is a better man than I. And then while Jesus is still speaking to the woman, the father's worst fears are realized. Messengers came from the synagogue leader's house saying to Jairus, "Your daughter has died. Why bother the teacher any longer?" What then for Jairus? Despair? Anger at the woman? Or at Jesus for stopping? They were so close. They could have made it. If only they hadn't stopped. There wasn't time to save them both. There wasn't time to save them both. And now this woman has been healed and Jairus' daughter is dead. This could have been a story about Jesus choosing to care for the poor and needy, choosing the outcasts over the rulers, the needs of the desperate woman over the needs of the respectable Jairus. But this is not that story. This is something else entirely. There wasn't enough time. Jesus had to choose. He allowed himself to be interrupted, and now the girl is dead. I can only imagine what Jairus is thinking. Jesus has compassion. Before Jairus can speak, Jesus looks him in the eye and says, "Don't be afraid. Just keep trusting." This isn't a dismissal of Jairus' fears. It's an exhortation. It's a foreshadowing, a reminder that the kingdom of God has drawn near and the rules are about to change. There wasn't enough time to save them both. There aren't enough resources to save them both. We live in a world that proclaims this scarcity, this world that speaks of zero-sum games and tough choices, a world that says there isn't enough to go around. They tell us to look to our own interests first, our needs first, our jobs, our security, America first. Fear born of the illusion of scarcity. The house is filled with people who are wailing. Jesus tells them, "The girl is only asleep," but they laugh at him. Even in this age, they know too well the realities of death. Jesus sends away the mourners and enters the girl's room with just her parents and his closest disciples. There she lies, and Jesus takes her hand and says, "Young girl, get up." Imagine her parents. Imagine Jairus' face, Jairus' tears when she rises up. The rules have been changed. The kingdom of God has drawn near, and the limits, the boundaries that enforced our zero-sum game are gone. The wind and the waves, the demons, sickness, even death itself has been overcome. This changes the math. The limits have been erased. It's no longer us or them, not enough to save them both. Jesus has broken down the boundaries. It is no longer a zero-sum game. Jesus has broken the rules. Even the rules of life and death. It changes the calculus. In place of scarcity, there is abundance. In place of death, there is life. There is enough for all.